than murdered. Other friends have flown before. On the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. And the bird said nevermore.
You're listening to The Call Podcast with Brandon and Josh.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new edition of The Call. It is a Baltimore Ravens podcast where we talk anything and everything Baltimore Ravens football. Thank you for listening to us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, the Baltimore Sports Report Network, Player.fm, Overcast. Google Play Music, and Satchel. Guys, what'd you think? We are two preseason games in. We've seen some new faces. We've seen some returnees. It's been a pretty busy week since we talked last, and we're giving you this episode a little bit early this week. So joining me, as always, to break everything down is my buddy Josh. What's going on, man?
Dude, just rolling through preseason, man. I'm just trying to get through it without any injuries, obviously, for the team, but we're less than 3 weeks away from the regular season, man. We're just pushing through.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go over this. We went down to Miami. The Ravens went down to Miami, wiped the floor with the Dolphins. Let's just talk about the first two games. What was it? The first game, it was the Redskins scored 3. The Dolphins scored 7. I know this is only preseason. I'm not trying to get ahead of myself, but the fact that they were able to hold them back to those single digits, that's a great sign for the Ravens.
Absolutely, man. And I mean, you look at the points scored. I mean, 23 points in the first game, 31 points in the second. Yeah, it's the second and third in the first all collaborative, but the fact remains is, I mean, it's not a full roster. I mean, we got a 53-man cut all at once, but you figured everybody's contributing and we're putting up, you know, those kind of points, and we're holding teams to 7 and 3 points respectively there. So, I mean, you know, you look at it, you know, we've only let up 10 points as a whole defensive unit, first, second, and third. So you have to kind of be impressed scoring wise. Obviously, we already know breaking down the play individually, we can get into that. But after they let up the touchdown, the Ravens just put pedal to the metal, man.
They really did. And the big news coming out of this second preseason game is a relatively unknown quarterback named Danny Woodrum. I want to call him Woodrum just because I like that name better, but it's Woodrum. Tell me a little bit about this guy. He's an undrafted rookie quarterback. I mean, you don't see that very often being like a big success in the NFL, but a lot of people are talking about him potentially backing up Flacco and not Mallett. What's your thoughts on that?
I actually like it. I mean, Mallett, we already know he's just catching a lot of heat. And I heard, and I had some in-depth conversation with fans. We compare him to the old school bowler days, man, where he's got happy feet, he's making these bad decisions. And Woodrum, the dude's got nothing to lose, man. He's third stringer, like borderline fourth practice squad guy, and comes out of nowhere, runs a perfectly executed bootleg play for a touchdown. He scored. And then you have to feel for the guy after the inspiration he put out there with his brother, 21-year-old brother with Down syndrome, and he said he inspired his play. And the dude, he's a likable guy, nothing to lose, very good on the podium as far as the press conference, handled the media well, carried himself well, and I can see him being the backup. I really hope he gets really good playing time come this Saturday in against Buffalo.
Yeah, I'm kind of intrigued. It's very interesting to see what will happen this coming weekend, whether or not he will move up a little bit. And I think they're still going to start the game with Ryan Mallett. And usually this is the third game is the one where you see the starters the most. But maybe we won't see Mallett as much, and we want to see more from Danny Woodrum. It'll be very interesting to come out of it. But do you think he would be a better fit backing up Joe Flacco than Mallett? I mean, of course, we don't want to see the backup quarterback, but with Joe already hurt and the potential of him coming back maybe a little too early or whatever, you know, with a sore back, he could go down again in the season. Do you think Woodrum, I mean, again, this is a very limited viewing of this guy, but do you think Woodrum could maybe steal that job away from Mallett?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, he's got the skill sets. Again, I want to see a little bit more playing time. But you've seen his legs. He's mobile. He executed that well. And I was actually joking. I said, oh, did we sign Kaepernick? No, it's Woodrum. You know, I mean, we're fine. We got a mobile guy. We got a formidable backup. And like Ozzie said, give these guys a chance. We're automatically trying to go outside the organization as soon as we see somebody fail. And give these guys a chance. We don't know what they can do. And we've seen with Woodrum, he coming out of nowhere. Now everybody knows his name. I never knew who he was, honestly. And you know me, being one of the biggest fans ever and getting a pulse on this team. He was way down there, the depth chart, maybe in a practice squad guy. And here he comes, you know, filling in. And here's another thing which is really funny. Not that Joe Flacco's job's in jeopardy, but without the Joe Flacco injury right now, I guarantee he probably wouldn't see but a fourth quarter or two or three series play at all if Joe was playing, because Joe would probably take up a significant amount of the first team snaps in that regard, and now Mallett did. So I believe without Flacco's injury, see the ripple effect.
Yeah.
Not saying his injury is a blessing, but I feel like we wouldn't really get to see it if it wasn't for it.
Now, we also got to see Danny Woodhead for the first time, and I do want to bring him up because since that game on Thursday, he missed practice 2 days in a row. Harbaugh said that he's a little banged up after that Thursday game, and that was my biggest concern, and a lot of fans' concern about signing Danny Woodhead is the fact that the guy is a little injury prone. I don't think he's getting off an ACL recovery after he hurt himself last year. So are you at all worried that Danny Woodhead, after one preseason game, is already missing practice?
Not concerned. Again, it's going to happen, the ebbs and flows of preseason practice. I think it's just standard protocol. I'm not expecting Woodhead to miss significant time. But what I did see, I was fine with. I mean, he held his own, you know, not blowing it out of the water as far as making big plays. But he's going to do his job and do it well, and especially the third down. If we have to go check down Charlie offense, he's going to take it. You know, he had, you know, need I to reiterate, 2015, he had 80-plus receptions as a running back, man. You talk about the impact of that. Just think about this, Brandon. Antonio Brown of the Steelers, the last 4 years has clocked 100-plus receptions in the last 4 years minimum. And you put Danny Woodhead 2 years removed out of an offense who caught 80 balls, a running back. So that's where that type of player's impact. So I chalk it up as minor. We'll monitor that. Don't see him missing any time.
Okay. Now, we've seen Terrence West have a good game, that first preseason game. We've seen Danny Woodhead. Is there, I mean, the jury's still out, but is there somebody who you think might be the starter?
Oh, as far as running backs?
Yeah.
I think Terrence West is going to get the nod at starting running back. Woodhead's going to be that kind of the spellback, you would say. The 1-2 punch there, you're going to have West and Woodhead. I really like what Buck Allen brings. I see him as a really good third option, if any, maybe a goal line, maybe if someone gets zinged up during the game. But right now, I think you're going to have in the depth chart West at one and Woodhead at two. Woodhead in passing situations, you have West who can catch, maybe even spread both of them wide in a split backfield and have them both go out as far as flares on the outside. So it's going to be good to see how Marty uses these running backs, but I think West is going to be the true number one starter because he's proved himself. And Woodhead's not that downhill runner pounded. West is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Woodhead, and if you could probably agree, Woodhead's the more finesse guy. You know, catch it out of flat, but and as I heard, and actually had a treat being a PSL owner, had another chance to get on a conference call and had Danny Woodhead and Tony Jefferson on the call. Heard a lot of great tidbits, and Danny Woodhead had a question as a fan asked him about that. He goes, no, do you see, like, you know, where do you see yourself playing here and there? And Danny's like, put me wherever. You know, if I'm playing special teams, if I got to catch a ball out of backfield in third and two, if I have to run up the middle on a third and two or short yardage, he goes, I'm just going to, whenever my number's called, I'm going to do what the coaching staff asked me to do and put my talents out there. And that's where you want. That's what you want a player. Not all about me and go, well, I don't do that, or all I do is do this. I mean, if he's out there and special teams need to block, or, you know, he needs to block for a passing situation, I think he'll be fine.
All right, now we got to talk about Mr. Crazy, Justin Tucker. This guy was begging the coaches to let him try a kick at, what, 72 yards? Now, I know it's preseason, and why not let the guy do it? But this guy's just crazy. Like, he really enjoys pushing himself and you know, trying new things, and like nothing really scares him. But man, this guy will do anything, won't he?
Dude, he's fearless. He wants to kick a 72-yard field goal, and I'm like, why not let him? It's preseason, but I see the risk there. You don't want Justin Tucker to pull groin or pull his leg or do something stupid because we want to do theatrics and try to kick a 70-yard field goal when it don't mean nothing. I see the point. Obviously, Justin's not mad about it. He's joking and he's poking fun at it, but what remains is the guy can do it. I mean, I was there in Detroit when he kicked a 61-yard field goal over the crossbar. He's kicked a couple 65 yards in practice. I was there a couple Sundays ago for practice, and he kicked a 59-yarder right down the middle. So, I mean, it can happen. But what happens is it's a sense of relief on the offense, knowing that you don't want to kick three all the time, especially. But here's the thing. If we sputter and we're down midfield, we can feel good at Justin Tucker can line up out there and kick a 50, 55, 60-yard field goal, and we're confident. Not to say he's 100% going to hit them all during the season, but we're confident that, hey, if it's windy and it's cold in November and we stutter and we need we can't move the ball past the 40-yard line, enemy territory, and we need a game winner or we need a game tire, he can kick a 50-plus yarder and we can go, he's probably going to make it, you know, as the stats say, about 80-something percent of the time. You know, 84, 85, 86, he's probably up there in the upper 80s, probably pushing the 88 to 90. I have to look at the stats. One of the most accurate kickers in NFL history, followed the suit of Matt Stover. And I even joke, man, how spoiled are we as Ravens fans? You know, you take the kicker for granted, but we had Matt Stover and Justin Tucker. Just think about that. Just think about the kickers we've had in our history. I know that New England had Vinatieri for all those years, and he went to Indianapolis, and he's one of the all-pro kickers, probably will be in the Hall of Fame. I know this year it voted in was Morton Anderson, a kicker. You know, maybe we'll see Tucker Stover there one day. It's hard to say. And I've always said Stover was an MVP in his own right, because if it wasn't for his leg, we wouldn't won those games when we went 21 quarters without a touchdown on offense, and he was the true MVP of the offense. You know, the defense took the cake that year, but he was the offensive MVP, and Tucker's bailed us out. I mean, how many game winners from even the Super Bowl year? I mean, look at all the game winners. You know, the one against New England, you know, there's a lot of game winners. The one against Detroit I was at, there's a lot that speak out there. So, you know, it's Justin Tucker being Justin Tucker and being what he is. But at the same time, you know, you want to see it, but let's save that for a game situation. But it's fun to know that he can kick it that far. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and he also can recover the ball from a fumble as well.
That I said that. I think I tweeted that. I said, add recovering a fumble on a kickoff to Legatron's legacy. It was kind of like, just like, hey, now it would have been epic if he'd have picked it up and ran it in for a touchdown. That would have been something.
Yeah, I definitely would have liked to have seen that, but this guy is just...
It was like at the time Haloti Ngata picked it off and like ran down the sideline at one time. It was like, can he do it? And he just barely missed it. And I was like, these players make special plays, but and that's what you want. You know, how many times you see kickers just kick the ball and they're standing back and how they're the last line of defense, basically trying to stop the guy to get a touchdown, and maybe you dive after his legs or you try to knock him out of bounds. But the dude's a tough guy. I mean, we know Tucker's all about, but they see him scrapping down there, not worrying about getting decked by a defender, making a play. That's what you want as a Raven. That's mm-hmm. what playing like a Raven means. It's hustling. It's, hey, I'm the only kicker, but I'm going to go out there and make a difference. It's not like, those guys are going to pick it up. No, kick the ball, get down there and scrap in and get your hands dirty. And that's what he did. And you have to applaud him, man. That's an example.
And I do want to bring up another veteran that has really made an impact this training camp, Lardarius Webb. Lardarius Webb got let go by the Ravens. It looked like it was about time for him to retire, and then he comes back. And he isn't expected to be a starter anymore. You know, he knows coming in he's the backup because they got a lot of young talent, and then injuries happen. And Lardarius Webb has had one of the best training camps of his career. He's looked fantastic in the preseason. He's looked fantastic on the training camp field. I'm just a little shocked that Lardarius Webb, I'm not surprised he's doing well, but I am shocked that this late in his career he's having one of his best years.
He is, and I think it just has to do with the position change. I mean, not to say when getting done at a shutdown corner, but his knees were a factor. But I think a breath of fresh air, being a new perspective on the defense, I think his skill sets fit that position, don't you think?
I do. And I think that maybe, you know, he's had a lot of injuries, and I think this new position for him really is working out well. And I think it's working out better than anybody, even the coaches, even expected.
I think it is too. And I think we're surprised as fans to see it working out, especially the depth of the corner. And we have Carr and we have Smith, and it just wasn't working. How many times do you see him get burned and you're like, man, Webb, come on, man, just get it together. And you've seen him get burned a lot big deep, and he bites on that. And I think the way he was, his skill sets are still secondary. You know, his knees are holding up. He's still athletic. Let's put him out there in safety where he's not getting, you know, one-on-one coverage a lot, because these big receivers are taking advantage of him. Put him against Antonio Brown. Put him up against a Rob Gronkowski. Put him against an A.J. Green. And it's just going to be a total mismatch. And I feel like it was a liability out there. And I think this is moving him from a liability to an asset out there in the backfield. I think it's really boded well for the Ravens.
Yeah, now another guy who's returning to this team after being let go is Jeremy Zuta. He got traded to the 49ers just a couple months ago, and then just a few days ago, the 49ers release him. And now the Ravens have all these problems with injuries. A lot of, you know, Alex Lewis was supposed to be in his spot, and James Hurst was supposed to be there. You know, there was potential of somebody moving into his spot, and then that stuff didn't work out. So Jeremy Zuta is invited back to the team. He's already practicing with them. What do you think of re-signing Jeremy Zuta? Because, yeah, we're in a tough bind right now because of injuries, but he was let go for a reason at the beginning, right?
Exactly. And whether that was a pure cap move, whether it was a purge to get that taken care of, the clear cap space to sign maybe a Macklin or these other players, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it was a personnel decision on that front, or if it was a play position versus that, oh, he sucks, we're going to let him go. But then it's kind of think, I'm going to go back, because the timeline obviously has been blurred at that point, but I almost want to see where he was let go. Was he let go prior to the Urschel retirement or before? Because that could have been, if it was before, then they were probably grooming John Urschel to be the starting center. And then out of nowhere, he wanted to retire. So then they had to scramble and find a center. And then with other people going down on the line, it's just they couldn't shuffle around. They had to hire somebody. So I almost want to look at that and really hone in on that for a second. But I think it was one of those two moves purely.
Now, Jeremy Zuta is going to be competing for his old spot against Ryan Jensen. Ryan Jensen really hasn't shown very much to me, especially last year, that he can hold that spot. Who do you see taking that spot there? Will it be Zuta or will it be Ryan Jensen?
I like it to be Jensen, but being that they brought Zuta back, you almost have to think, not that it's given on a silver platter, but you have to think with Alex Lewis going down, they have to keep Jensen at that tackle slash guard out there and shuffle him around a little bit. That's what I believe. I believe Zuta is going to be the center because we need help on the line.
Absolutely. So injuries to Sunday's practice, a bunch of people didn't practice. Of course, Joe Flacco, Ronnie Stanley still out, Rashad Perryman still out, Marlon Humphrey still out, Tim Williams is still out, Quincy Adebojo, he's still out. The Ronnie Stanley, out of all of those, worries me the most. He was a guy who didn't miss a game in college. He gets drafted by the Ravens. I become a huge fan of him because of his work on the field and off the field with Barks Animal Shelter. But he missed, what, 4 to 5 games last year because of an injury, and now he's it's an undisclosed injury right now, but he's missing in training camp and the preseason. Obviously, this line is banged up, but what would a Ronnie Stanley-less offensive line mean in the regular season for this team?
I mean, Ronnie Stanley is going to make that big impact, man. And he had a great year. If you look at his grades as a rookie, he made a huge impact. Obviously, there was early comparisons to him to Ogden. I don't want to go that far being a rookie, but the guy's big, guy's physical, guy's strong. He needs to stay healthy because we got that blind side to talk about. I mean, how many times that Joe's blind side needs to be tackled or protected? Because if you look, Hurst wasn't getting it done. He had to protect Flacco, and he got hurt. Yeah, it was on the other side of the ball, granted, but Flacco's got to see that coming. But the pocket, you only have so much time, and when you don't have these big physical guys there, I mean, Stanley, I don't see it being a prolonged injury, man, but I just don't see it at all. But we need him back, and we need him back big time. Then you got Howard. I mean, you got the bookends. If depending where they put Howard, it's really hard right now to see the line. We know what player's going to be on the line. I think, obviously, if you look at the line, you got Jensen, Zuta, Yanda, Howard, and Stanley. So there's your line, but where are they going to stack up? I don't know, because the shuffling still got to take place.
Yeah, and I mean, the shuffling's expected. This is preseason. We're going to see where the guys fit the best, so that is expected. But without Ronnie Stanley out there, I'm definitely worried, and hopefully this isn't a long-term injury, and he's ready to go by the regular season. Now, coming up on Saturday is the Ravens at home against the Buffalo Bills. One guy that the Ravens won't be seeing, Anquan Boldin, who abruptly retires from the NFL after signing with the Bills. I don't really know a lot about his reasoning for retiring and why it was so abrupt. I don't know what's going on, but I hate to see Anquan Boldin retire. I was a big fan of his when he was with the Baltimore Ravens. Him and Joe worked so well together. He's had a great career, and it's weird he's going out that way. But we got to say, you know, thank you so much for your time with the Ravens and being in the NFL. Anquan Boldin is a tremendous talent. Any team would be happy to have him.
Absolutely, man. You said it best, but I'll start on a later note before I dig into that one. You know why he retired, right?
No, I don't.
No? Well, here's why. He pretty much saw that the Bills traded away Sammy Watkins. They acquired Jordan Matthews. Jordan Matthews got hurt. He saw he had to take the load of the offense, and he goes, no, bro, I can't do this anymore.
Wow.
That's what happened. I mean, it could be a true story, because that's what happened. I mean, they traded away Sammy Watkins, who was basically an all-pro if he stayed healthy. Jordan Matthews, you know, the best receiver technically was on Philly before Alshon Jeffrey arrived along. They shipped him up there because Philly has Torrey Smith and Alshon Jeffrey. They shipped him up there. Brandon and Jordan Matthews is hurt, man. So it was kind of like, but he could have gotten camp. You know, the other side is maybe he's feeling it in the upper 30s. You know, he got to camp and was like, man, I really can't do this, man. This is going to be a toll. You know, last year he carried a good amount in Detroit. Great career. Very instrumental in the Super Bowl 47 championship run here. I mean, I just want to go back and remember his playing days in Arizona. I mean, how about a 1-2 punch combination in Arizona with him and Larry Fitzgerald, man? Holy that was cow. A tandem for the ages, man, wasn't it?
It really was. And Anquan is a tremendous talent. And just some of the stuff him and Joe was just like Hall of Fame caliber play.
It was, and I saw some of the highlights just going back and remembering. I mean, and again, you know, I could play devil's advocate here and say, would any other quarterback throw those kind of balls? But I don't know if you saw the highlights I posted, but here's another thing. Remember what happened in the he caught a pass. Just think of the playoff runs, okay? Not the regular season games, but the playoff run. He caught the touchdown pass against Indianapolis at home back in the end zone. He reached up for it. It was great over the defender. He was still instrumental in the Mile High Miracle game, but that was all Torrey Smith and Jacoby Jones, basically, and Joe Flacco. AFC title game. Who can forget those 2 second-half touchdowns, man? Right over the top, put us up on the board, 28-13, we win. And who could forget, just like Brandon Stokely in Super Bowl 35, first play of the game or first touchdown of the game was a pass. We took the opening possession, went right down the field. Anquan Boldin right in the back of the end zone. Touchdown, Ravens, 7-0. We never looked back, never relinquished the lead. Wire-to-wire, Super Bowl 47 win. But not only that, but think of the two big instrumental plays he had and a couple of other plays beyond that. And we're going to sit here and just think about the plays, and you might go, wow, he was impactful, not only but his play, but some of the plays that we're going to talk about. But remember I posted the highlights, Brandon, but there was a third down play. Flacco was getting thrust out of pocket, flushing to his right. He looks like he was going to throw it out of bounds. All of a sudden, it was still in bounds, and Boldin catches it like 30 yards down the field. Remember that play?
I do.
Yep. And then another one was the huge balls he called. Third and inches. And still to stay on the how Flacco audibled out of it, but he threw it to a one-on-one coverage on a rope. He took a 3-step drop and threw it right to Boldin, and Boldin caught it for the first down. How instrumental was that? And he had another instrumental first down in the Super Bowl where he did a catch and run. But here's another play, and I go back and watch it. You remember the 4th-and-29 play, Ray Rice? How can you forget that play?
Mm-hmm.
Boldin's block was the one that sprung him, if you don't remember that.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yep. Well, and wasn't that against Eric Weddle?
Yep.
Yeah, it was.
Another current Raven. So just think about that. Just – You know, you might say, hey, Josh, how do you remember these things? It's just, I do. It's just, when you remember these plays that are impactful, This is why I told you I capture the impactful moments. I have these pictures signed for a reason in my collection, and just there's a reason for that. There's a reason why I live for the moments and I remember these things, because they wouldn't have happened without the play. And yeah, Anquan Boldin didn't catch a pass on that play in 4th and 29, but he threw the block to get Ray Rice the extra yardage to get to the 30 yards, or at least the 29 yards, to keep the drive going, and we win the game and all be all. But another thing I wanted to touch on for Bolden's career, and I want to hear your thoughts too, is you remember, I don't know if you remember this, it was a game, he was in Arizona, and he got clocked, and he broke his jaw, and he had to get his jaw wired.
Oh my gosh.
Remember that?
No, I don't remember getting...
And he came back that season. He wasn't even out for the year, he came back.
Oh.
Yeah, the dude's tough. And I've said this, like Steve Smith before him, and like Derek Mason, every time I watched him play, I said, that dude's a Raven. He plays tough as nails. He's physical. And he proved it here in his great few years he was here. And, you know, wish him the best. And could be a future Hall of Famer in the waiting, just like Steve Smith. I mean, the numbers don't lie. He's a Super Bowl 47 champion, an all-pro at that, pro bowler. And we'll see where it stacks up.
Yeah, so with the Buffalo...
Did you get a chance to meet him when he was here?
I never got to meet Anquan, no.
I met him twice. I was fortunate.
And humble guy, good guy when you met him?
Yeah, man. He signed – I got him to sign two things. I got – long ago, it was his first year here. It was when he was doing an Under Armour campaign he was advertising for. Mm-hmm. And I got one of the store banners. They were, like, trying to throw them away. And I told the store, no, I want that. And it was this big life-size poster of Anquan. And I had that signed. And then he signed the first catch in Super Bowl 47. I had that signed.
That's awesome.
So I met him both times. So it was a great guy to talk to. Great memories here, Baltimore, as always. He's always welcome back, Raven for life.
Yeah, and I mean, people will debate whether he's a Hall of Famer or not, but I definitely would love to see him, you know, be a part of the Ring of Honor, at least at M&T Bank Stadium.
Absolutely, man. And he's definitely going to be back in Ring of Honor, and I've always sounded surprised Derek Mason's not there yet. Yeah, Derek Mason's not there, and I'm pretty sure Steve Smith should be up there. If not, it'd be a disgrace, but I've been clamoring. I'm like, they have Ernest Biner of all players, but they don't have Mason. They don't have, you know, hopefully they'll have Bolden. I mean, they have a lot of good stars up there, but there's some stars that are missing that I feel like we should rewrite the Ring of Honor books and redo it.
All right, so with the Buffalo Bills coming to town on Saturday, of course, you know, it doesn't matter whether they win or lose. Of course, a win's always better, but is there anyone in particular that you want to see more from? I mean, this is really going to be one of the last big pushes for rookies or undrafted players to really make an impact. Is there anybody that you think is kind of on the bubble that if they have a great game on Saturday, they would make the team?
On the bubble, making the team, you almost want to say for the depth of it. I mean, I think Campanero could be on the outside looking in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That was not a name I was expecting.
No. And I just had that funny feeling. I mean, maybe keeping on as a special teamer. I think he's on the outside looking in, trying to get in. I'm trying to think of good, wholesome players. I mean, some players that surprised this year already. Kafusi's up and coming career in the second year. You know, you got the rookies performing. I think all of them are safe. It's just, but I just think from the receiver standpoint, special teamer, the dude's oft injured. He dropped a couple good passes again, you know, and it was Mallett too. I mean, Mallett put it there. Campanero just dropped it. I'm like, you got to catch that, man. So, I mean, you know, not to blame one or two plays, but I just feel like I say Campanero's on the outside looking in, but I could be wrong, man. It's just all speculation.
All right, we'll see what happens come Saturday. But, Josh, is there anything else you want to cover Ravens-wise for this week?
Cover? Other than that, I just wanted to, you know, pretty much show where we're at in the preseason. Obviously, week three is upon us. The last home game before the regular season game in week two, under the lights Saturday nights, the third preseason game. No, Joe Flacco is not playing. He's not expected to at all, not even at practice this week. I've heard some good reports that, I don't know if you saw the post I posted, that Mike Wallace was saying he's more like that Weapon X. Like, he's in that project and waiting, and you're all going to be surprised. So I think the Ravens and the receiving core, they know what Joe's up to. He might be secretly working out, but I think with the Ravens, you know how they play close to the vest, that they don't like things out there. They don't like things out from the media and, oh, Joe Flacco's fine and this and that. they're kind of like, look, on the back end, he's probably getting in work with receivers. He's probably fine. They're probably going to usher him in. We're less than 3 weeks out from opening in Cincinnati. I think he'll be fine. I don't see him playing any preseason games. If any, it's going to be light contact in practice to get him acclimated to the throws. He's going to get his full force contact in Cincinnati week one. Am I okay with it, man? No. I'd rather see him in week four in preseason at least to get a series or two in to say, hey, he's ready. But it is what it is. But then you don't want to put that out there if a defender actually cracks him. And then we're all going to be up in arms. Oh, why'd you put him in? He's hurt now. So you don't want that risk. You don't want that to happen to the team. And I believe that there's going to be no surprises. I think it's going to be a straightforward cut. You're going to see who's going to be on the team, who's not in a few weeks here. And they're doing it differently. I don't know if you remember this, but years past how they cut him from like so much down to 70 and then 70 to 53. It's all going to be one big purge of players.
Right.
So like 1,000 players or something across the league are going to be released all at once.
Which
so
I heard that they are releasing enough players that could play in an entirely another league somewhere
pretty
else.
Much. Yeah. They can pretty much form another NFL and like, here you guys, go play. Like, I mean, that just shows you, number one, not only how many players are playing in the NFL, but how hard it is to crack into a starting unit on the NFL, like in the NFL. Like, it's just crazy, man. Like, there are 53 men on each team times 32, but then it's like, you have to be the best of the best of the best and prove it all through preseason, all throughout the whole time in a camp and mini camp and strengthening, conditioning, and staying healthy to say, hey, this guy's worthy of a spot to try to get us a Super Bowl championship. So that's just what I got for.
Yeah, and you think about this too, and I've wondered this myself. Look at baseball. Look at the MLB. Look at hockey. Look at the NHL. They have minor leagues for players to get better and get game experience so they can become better players and make it to the big leagues at some point. Would the NFL actually do better by having these people on the practice squad or these guys getting cut, maybe doing like a minor league type of league? Because to me that makes sense, because the only way you're going to get better is to get some game experience. And you know, we have for the Capitals, the Hershey Bears are the minor league team, and even below that is the South Carolina Stingrays. They've got players upon players with all this depth there. Do you think the NFL could potentially, like, I think it's a no-brainer, have minor leagues in smaller markets? You know, look at St. Louis, who just lost a team. You know, if they could have a minor league team there, you've still got football fans, you've still got people gaining experience, you're still selling tickets. I mean, I don't know why they're not doing this with the amount of people they're letting go, and they could have a whole nother league. Let these guys get better and let them, you know, work at it and potentially make a team the next year.
Dude, I couldn't agree with you more, man, because you're right. You know, the cities that could be starting for football, again, San Diego, you just got a team taken away. Oakland's about to get a team taken away in a few years. Why don't you bring football back to them? It's not only like a pity party or peace offering, but it's like, hey, give me something back. But then look at it this way. I think we kind of have it built in. Did we not just form the Baltimore Brigade AFL team, and the Philadelphia Soul up the road have a team? And I think Cleveland's got a team and Tampa's got a team. Yeah, there's only like maybe 5 or 6 teams in the league, but there are other avenues. There's semi-pro leagues around the area. I think Maryland's got a couple of them. Semi-pro football. You got Arena Football League. That's where Kurt Warner came from. That's where Tommy Maddox came from, as you remember, that he got hurt in Roethlisberger came to fruition by our doing. So just there's players that come from those ranks. But you're right. It's not like a like minor league, like baseball, like AA, AAA. It's not like the NBA, where the NBA has an NBA development league, and it's called the D League, where they actually have a whole like league. They got team names, they got jerseys, memorabilia, all that stuff. They have a championship, and then they just bring them up and trade them up from there. And the other sports do it, but I think the NFL, they kind of have it built in with the college. You know, you groom them, and they're taking these college players. They get them in the draft. You draft them, and they go, and then these undrafted. But there's a lot of undrafted players that make it. Tony Jefferson's one of them. How many players have you heard that are just undrafted? They don't make it in the draft, and then they, whether they hired an agent and they sent the tape to a team and say, "Hey, look at me. You need it. You need this need because you got guys injured." There are a lot of undrafted free agents that happen in the NFL that don't get drafted every year, and there's a lot of big names out there. And I'm one of these podcasts, we'll dig up some big names, but I know there's a few off the top of my head there, and on the Ravens at least. But you have a great point, man. I couldn't agree with you more. If they had some sort of a development league and say, hey, the guys that don't make it, go form a squad, go on the other teams, and hey, if your number's called, we're going to pluck people up back and forth and send people down. How many times I get an Orioles update that the Orioles sent somebody down to AAA, someone to AA, oh, they're bringing this guy up, or if a guy's hurt, they give him a rehab start, and they put him in, like, you know, like what happened with Chris Davis and everybody else. They go to the Ironbirds or whatever. I mean, the Aberdeen Ironbirds are an example of that. You know, that's where Manny Machado came up from, and Frederick Keys and all that. Like, that's what baseball is all about, so maybe you can get something going like that. Who knows? But I love where you're headed with that.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing, you brought up the Arena Football League, and it didn't really, I mean, there were definitely some crowds there, but there was not anywhere near an NFL team, and it's definitely not the same talent, but I think you put that NFL stamp on it, and I think people would take it a little bit more seriously. You know, they're looking at it going, ooh, arena football, it's not going to be any good. But you go out there and you have, you know, you're outside in a stadium like that and you have an NFL brand on it, I think people would still flock to it and would still wear jerseys and stuff like that. I
mean, absolutely.
You look at the Baltimore Brigade, Laquan Williams is the star of that team, and he was a former Raven many years ago, and he was from Baltimore. So, I mean, I think – Give it the NFL logo. Let the NFL be a part of it, and I think people would flock to it, and I think people would flourish there. But, you know, maybe one day, but I think the NFL would definitely benefit from that. So before we get out of here, we got to talk about it. It is the biggest fight in combat sports. Mayweather versus McGregor is this Saturday. I don't know who planned this game at the same time as this fight, but you're killing me here. This is huge. This is boxing versus MMA. What are your thoughts on this? Because I got to tell you, I don't think it's going to be a great fight. You've got Mayweather, who, you know, plays a lot of defense. You've got McGregor, who has never been in a boxing match before. But the fact that these two guys were able to come together, sign a contract, and actually have this fight happen, I am in disbelief that actually happened. And I want to watch this fight just for the sheer fact that I never, ever thought I would see it.
I agree. And how long ago has it been talked about? You know, it was that kind of hearsay, like, oh, it was just, you know, fun to talk about. I think it's pretty great for the fans. And Dana White said that. This isn't for the sport. This isn't for the guys. It's for the fans. He said the fans wanted this. And if anybody thinks otherwise, pull everybody else. I mean, everybody was clamoring for it. That was the only fighter they want to see. This is the two biggest super egos on the face of this planet right now, outside of maybe Rob Gronkowski, who's so flamboyant. I can't tell you two dynamic superstars in their respective genres who are so out there in the way they talk, the way they articulate, the way they flaunt their lifestyle, their money. You know, McGregor's nickname is Notorious for a reason. Money, Floyd Money Mayweather and TBE and the best ever and Money Team, he has his nicknames for a reason. Mayweather's 49-0, whether you love him or hate him. This is fun to talk about because everybody says, yeah, Ali's the greatest. You had, you know, Mike Tyson, Foreman. There's a lot of greats before him. But I've always said, hey, even Muhammad Ali felt the taste of defeat. Mayweather has not. And Mayweather's definition of boxing is hit and not get hit. Everybody might hate that because he's defensive. I've always said haters are having anger towards everyone reaching success. So you can hate all you want. I don't know, and I'll get your prediction what side of fence you're on, because I know we've been talking about this for a long time. But obviously I'm on money side. I've always been. I said, you know, somebody who's undefeated and does the way he does and trains the way he does and no one can beat him. I mean, I wasn't around the 72 Dolphins. And I saw an 18-0 Patriots, 16-0 and two wins in a playoffs, go to Super Bowl and lost on a helmet catch. I actually kind of was really rooting for the Patriots at that point. Yeah, it was great to see the Giants take care of business, but I've yet to see a perfect season. You see it in college football, but college football, that's a joke anyway. I don't feel like that counts, and it's not even pro sports. But when you're 49-0, face 49 professionals in your entire career, the dude's probably, what, near 40? Figured half his life, and no one's beat him. He's never tasted a defeat, so that's why I gravitate towards that. If I wanted to be a boxer, I would look up to that and go, hey, the dude's never lost. What better way to go to the best? Not to say you wouldn't take lessons from Ali and the greats, but then you look at it this way. It's obviously, we know Mayweather wouldn't never go in the octagon, but to see McGregor step out of his own right, man, and to his own sport, and to learn something very quickly to do something like this. It's outrageous. It's extraordinary. It's going to be extreme. It's been fun to talk about what the outcome's going to be. Is it going to be a bore? Is he going to knock him out? They went to lower weight gloves. They had 8-ounce gloves. If Bode's McGregor, is McGregor going to cave under the pressure of MMA reflexes? Is he going to accidentally kick him? What's going to happen? Are they just going to go pop off? We don't know, but to really get it down to what it boils down to is this is WWE-type WrestleMania stuff. This is pure entertainment. I expect Floyd to win and go 50-0. Whether this really counts as a 50th win, I would believe so, because it's a legal sanctioned boxing match in the state of Nevada. They had to get the Mayweather, or McGregor had to apply for his license. So to me, it would be a solidified to go 50-0 and what the way to do it. But I heard the numbers would be staggering. If they push the Pacquiao fight numbers, Floyd's going to bank $300 million and McGregor $100 million. Just insane. Think about the money that's around.
That is just insane amounts of money.
It's insane.
I will go fight Floyd Mayweather for $100 million.
Yeah, I'll run around the ring and throw a few jabs and throw it air for $100 million. I mean, you think these guys are laughing all the way to the bank at our expense. And then you'll probably see bar fights, somebody to be stupid, and these guys don't care. They're rich beyond their wildest dreams, and they're making, what is it, 6, 7, 8? They're making 9 figures, at least. They're laughing all the way to bank going, you guys are losers. You're paying us to see us play. But, I mean, I'm going to be right there every step of the way. And me, I'm excited because as a fan to get this fight going, because it gives me one last chance to see Mayweather do it. Whether he does get knocked out and he's got the blemish, either way, I get to see him one last time, and it's exciting for me. And McGregor to do that, it's almost like it reminds me of how Brock bounces back. UFC, WWE, yeah, it's different. It's scripted. It's, you know, wrestling versus MMA. It's not boxing, but to do that and to see these guys multifaceted like that, it's pretty incredible, man. And I'm really interested to see how it plays out. If McGregor gives him run for his money, great. I'm down either way. Whether Mayweather loses, I'll take it in grace as a fan. And if Notorious knocks him out or if he wins, I'll be like, wow, that's incredible. Whatever way, I'm going to enjoy the night, man. And which side of the fence are you on?
Well, I'm not a huge boxing fan. I've never actually watched a Mayweather fight. I've watched highlights. I've never really followed him. So, of course, I am pulling for Conor McGregor. However, I don't see Conor McGregor winning this fight. Just for the sheer fact, like you said, Mayweather is undefeated, 49-0. He's been doing this for a long time. And Conor McGregor's been training as a boxer for 2 years. I just don't see McGregor getting over that hurdle. I think Mayweather, I think they're going to put on a great show. I don't think it's going to be a great fight, but I think that these guys are both working very hard to put on a great show. McGregor, though, has all the confidence in the world, and that's what I really like about this
guy. He has nothing to lose.
Nothing to lose. He's got everything to gain. This entire...
That's what you fear.
Yeah, Mayweather and McGregor, they are selling this entire card on those two names. That's all that matters. Like, UFC fights, yeah, they sell it on McGregor's name, but there's an undercard, and there's you know, they stack those cards, and there's plenty of good fights, but everybody's always there to see McGregor. This is McGregor-Mayweather. I want to see McGregor win. I would be shocked if it happened. I would love to see it if it happened, because I don't think anyone's expecting it. But he is so confident. He is so good at what he does. Like he says, he envisions things. And it's the same thing Tom Brady said. He envisions things and makes them happen by hard work and by learning and by doing what he has to do. He said, you know, I envisioned I'd fight in the UFC. I did it. I envisioned and I told everybody I was going to hold two belts in two different weight classes
and
at the same time. He did it. He said, I'm gonna have my own sports brand. He's doing that with this fight. He said, I'm going to make nine figures for a fight. He did it. He's envisioning knocking Mayweather out by the fourth round. I can't deny that's a very good possibility if McGregor says it's going to happen. But McGregor's been doing this for 2 years. We saw what happened when CM Punk trained for MMA for 2 years.
Yep. He got knocked out, like, what, half the round?
In 2 minutes, yeah. 2 minutes, 13 seconds. So it's hard to transition to this. And
it is.
If Mayweather were to get in the octagon, no question he would lose. But this is definitely his ring. and it's his world. And even though I think McGregor schooled him on the mic on that world tour, that world press tour, and I think he kind of – he shook Mayweather a little bit. Mayweather seemed a little out of his element there.
He did. I'll tell you that right now. As a Mayweather fan who's followed him a long time, he almost didn't want to – he almost didn't want to know what to say or couldn't retaliate. He didn't have anything.
Yeah, but
owning the mic is one thing, but Mayweather owns the ring, and that's another, and that's what has to prove. You're right. It's, you know, Mayweather. I think there's more pressure on Mayweather because his 49-0 legacy, if this is 50-0, I've always said, and I'm kind of glad he's fighting again because I feel like 49-0 is a weird number. If it were me and in the ego that I have, I'd be like, dude, I'm going to fight again and get to 50. Like, find me an opponent. Like, 49-0 is a weird number, but 50-0, that says something. It's just that right good number, 50-0, like 500, like it's just 500, like it's right there. But it's just a weird number. That's why when he fought after Pacquiao and won his 49th, I just like, and he's done? Like, really? You don't want to go after 50? Like, I just found that odd. So, kind of glad he's going after it this weekend. It's finally here, August 25th. You know the world will be watching. If you're one of those guys that say you're not, let's see if you're a man of your word, because I've heard some people talk, I'm not watching that. Yeah, you will. If not, you're going to be looking online for results, because no one can just hide from this. This is big. This is huge. It's a super fight for the ages. And how about this? Just think about this. In the same week, we have a total eclipse in the same week as a super fight. Like, that'll never happen. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's just pretty crazy how it's been a great week. But I don't know if you saw today, but had a glance at the eclipse. It was pretty cool.
Oh yeah, we filmed the whole thing at work. We were streaming it on YouTube. We were doing all that. So, yeah, it's pretty amazing stuff. But anyway, I say McGregor. I want McGregor to win, but I think Mayweather's going to win. But I would be very happy if McGregor was able to pull that off. But Josh, long show. Ravens super fight. We got everything. Have we covered everything for this show?
We covered it. Quote the Raven, nevermore.
All right, guys. If you want to continue your conversation with Josh or I, you can. If you want to tell us who you think's going to win, Mayweather or McGregor, you let us know. You know where to follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at BrandoCast. Josh, where can people tweet to you at?
Always at ItalianGQ52.
All right, guys, go to Facebook.com/TheCallPodcast. Like us over there. Whenever a new show comes out, you will be the first to know. Guys, do us a favor. Write us an iTunes review and let people know on social media about the call and how we're getting you ready for the Ravens season. Let people know on Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr and Pinterest and Instagram and Reddit and Snapchat, anywhere you are social on the web with your phone. Say, I'm a Baltimore Ravens fan. I listen to the call and you should too. So that's pretty much it for the call this week. Josh, take us out the way you always do.
Man, Brandon, thank you always for a great show, great conversation. Hope you all enjoy this one. And again, we're rolling right through preseason. Week number 3 is upon us. Second preseason home game under the lights, 7 o'clock on the 26th. Hey, you look at it this way. It's the pre-show to the fight. Hey, what better way to roll in a Saturday night? Ravens, Bills under the lights at M&T at 7. Pay-per-view starting at 10 o'clock. It's going to be one wild Saturday night. Can't wait to get it popping. And we're winding down August, and we're moving March and right on to September, man. It's, dude, I said on Sunday, 3 weeks away. We're 3 Sundays away from waking up and having a 1 o'clock regular season kickoff against Cincinnati, and it all counts. It's going to come down to this. Let's root the Ravens hard. We know it's at stake. The spots are on the line. Man, we got to get healthy. We got to mend the injuries because, hey, we need everybody we can because we have a daunting schedule ahead of us. 3 out of 4 against division opponents. We need to start out strong. We need to show them we mean business, and we're going to bounce back. We're going to be in the playoffs. So we're going to enjoy it. Ravens, Bills slated for Saturday night. Baltimore Ravens, let's fly high.
This has been a production of Brando Cash Entertainment. Music by Brad Lepore and Daniel Kelly from the DBK Studio. For more information, go to BrandoCash.com.
The Call is a member of the Baltimore Sports Report Network. Find more podcasts like this at BaltimoreSportsReport.com.